It's Big Ten Media Week with Danny and Dusty.
Rooted in substance, not flash. Rooted in substance. Today, we talk with our pads.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app. Jump back to earlier parts of your favorite fan shows on the Odyssey app. The only way to rewind Portland's sports leader.
Big Ten Media Week with Danny and Dusty on 1080.
You're talking about every moment, right? Every moment.
The Fan.
Hour number three here on Danny and Dusty on a wonderful Tuesday afternoon. Thank you for joining us. Whether you're listening on 1080 AM The Fan, watching along on YouTube.com/1080AM The Fan or Twitch.tv/1080AM The Fan. We appreciate you. We love you. And thank you for hanging out with us on day one of Big Ten Media Days.
Bah, bah, bah.
So many media days.
Yeah.
Three of them, in fact. Starting today, going into tomorrow, where we'll have the USC and UCLA. And then on Thursday, when Oregon and Washington also make their official introduction into the Big Ten. And, well, day one on Friday when they're all official members of the Big Ten.
That's crazy. It's super weird to kind of go through this and be like, oh, well, it's officially official. Pac-2.
It did not upset me or bother me in the sense of, oh, it's going to be weird. Like, but now it feels weird.
Yeah.
It legitimately does. We talked about last hour, the whole idea of like this being at your first day of high school. Nothing feels familiar. Nothing feels normal, whether it's the facility, whether it's the media groups, the local radio and TV. Everything just feels different.
Or the buttloads of money that each of these schools are going to be raking in.
Well, that feels
relatively
similar.
Yeah.
That feels relatively similar.
No, not really, because it's going to be gobs and gobs of money. In about 10 years, they're saying, that media deal is going to be tasty, my friends.
Yeah,
tasty.
That's why we got here. And speaking of media, Paul Feinbaum, appeared on First Take. And boy, did he set off to irritate the living hell out of me. He said Deion Sanders would be the perfect replacement for Lincoln Riley at USC simply because, well, I think he's got an axe to grind with Lincoln Riley.
To me, it's about trajectory. And I think he's lost the momentum. He had that town. Stephen, you live there a lot of the year. You have to win in L.A., otherwise you lose badly. And I think he's losing badly. And instead of harping on Lincoln Riley, I've decided to come up with a solution. I thought about this the other day. Okay, maybe he does well, maybe he doesn't. But the answer is really moving forward. And I believe the answer after this season is Deion Sanders. He's going to be tired of Colorado because, quite frankly, it's not prime time. He's done well, as well as he can with his son and Travis Hunter and all the Stephen A's and Shannon Sharp appearances. But that's going to dry up this year because they're not going to be that great. But you put prime in Tinseltown, and I think you have one of the great combinations in history. We just got through talking about, or you did, LeBron. LeBron has owned that town as many others before him. And I think Deion Sanders, as the coach at Southern Cal, is the answer to the problems. Lincoln Riley is a good coach. He's got a great resume. Deion Sanders just exudes exactly what that community is all about. He takes the recruiting there, which Lincoln had and then lost, but I think he sustains it, especially now. Today, the Big Ten Media Days is going on with Southern Cal. And can you imagine a year from today, Deion Sanders walks into Big Ten Media Days. Everybody else, get out of the way.
It's my own personal hell. I hate everything about this.
What do you hate about it?
I mean, what has Deion, like, I want Deion to be successful at Colorado, but what has he done to really bring anything to that program other than bring Travis Hunter with him and his son?
Yeah, that is a great point. Lincoln Riley's 74-18 as a head coach.
Yeah.
But here's the
multiple Heisman winners.
The big issue in that is of those 18 losses, eight of them have come in 2 years at USC. And
with a lot of them last year.
And with the Heisman Trophy winner and the number one overall draft pick.
Yes.
I mean, in that, one of the big reasons why Oklahoma fans were like, oh, yeah, Goodrich, we don't like him anyways, is that they said the defense was terrible there. The defense has been terrible at USC. It's actually far worse than it was at Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And Oklahoma, they aren't sitting there anymore saying, oh, we're so glad he's gone. They're on to the SEC. Brent Venables is a fine coach.
Absolutely.
He's doing a good job. But at the same time, they're not at the level that they were.
They don't have the same juice.
With Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley is learning right now how to get out of his own way because he hasn't handled USC very well. And I think that there is something that Feinbaum is saying that there is truth to, in that to be the head coach and be successful at USC, you have got to embrace the Hollywood.
Yes, you Pete Carroll, the part of the illustriousness of USC in that period was the biggest part was the success.
And but it was Sark did the same thing. He just a little too much.
A little too saucy, as it were. But Lincoln Riley going full Chip Kelly and shutting down practices, shutting down media, blacking out everything. You don't do that at USC. You do the complete opposite. You kind of put it on the table, as it were, and go, this is what I'm working with. Deal with it.
And he has not done a good job of doing that.
No. He had the run-in with the local reporter where they banned him for 2 weeks, and they ended up having to walk that back because Lincoln acted out of pocket. Lincoln doesn't make the appearances as necessary to the alumni and boosters meetings that are not only necessary in college football, but you're behind the Dodgers. You're behind the Lakers. The Rams, depends on how good you are.
If you're great at USC,
you were behind the Lakers and the Dodgers, and that is it.
Mm-hmm.
That is the level that USC has shown, not only during the Pete Carroll era, but before that. You can be the third best team in Los Angeles ahead of other professional teams.
I just wonder with USC if they're losing a little bit of that momentum with their fan base, though, because they have not done a very good job on the recruiting trail because of who they are, because they are USC. And being USC means that you aren't a top 20 recruiter. You are a top 5 recruiter.
Yes.
That is what you should be.
You walk into living rooms and you already are ahead of most of the country.
One of the things that USC has been criticized for, and we're seeing it right now, is they have way too many cooks in the kitchen that feel that they have a big voice and it gets in the way.
Yeah.
Look at their athletic director hires that they've had. Mm-hmm. Look at the fact that the coaches that they will run right out of town, and rightfully so, because they haven't made great hires before. Well, you went and you got Lincoln Riley, and your NIL, once that hit, was an absolute mess. It's been a disaster down there. There's guys that were threatening to transfer because they weren't getting the money that they were promised in that NIL.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot have that. And on top of that, when you're not winning football games, that compounds everything, because guys would be more prone to stick around and tough it out if you're winning football games too. You can't do it and go 8-5 and have your defense be an abject failure.
Yeah, no, I was talking to Antonio Morales a couple weeks ago from The Athletic, who covers USC, and so was checking in on the NIL situation. And he goes, it's not money. They've got more money than God. It's like what you mentioned. It's not having the organization. It's not being as prepared as Oregon, Ohio State, or Michigan, or Alabama. It's not having the framework around it, because I believe the last update just came out. USC is the most expensive school in the country. They generate more revenue than basically anyone, just off admission stuff.
But
that didn't touch the level of endowment that they have. It's in the top 10 in the country.
But again, I think this is where it falls on the head coach.
Yes.
Is that you have to organizationally, and we were talking about this earlier, the new age of head coach is you have to have the hire of your general manager who is in charge of all of that, who is that liaison to, you know, the inside of the football program and those that are outside of the football program, and being able to control kind of how your football program is perceived by the boosters who are funding all the NIL. That's your head coach, and having him go out and glad hand, which Lincoln Riley does not want to do. He does not like doing. And that's got to change for Lincoln Riley. I don't think Dion necessarily is the guy to make sure that happens, because look, you want to see USC fans revolt. The turnover in the transfer portal, that's how you would, their boosters would go absolutely ape,
bonkers,
you know what, because of the fact that they'd be like, wait a minute, Like, we gave NIL to this guy so we could land him. He's gone in a year. Deion in Colorado is working right now because he's like, yeah, so, all right, our two most highly coveted recruits in my first recruiting class, they enter the portal. They're gone. Dylan Edwards, namely. And the booster's like, well, we're still seeing more publicity and recognition than Colorado football has gotten in a very long time. Yeah. We're going to be okay with that. At USC, that ain't going to fly.
No.
It will not fly. Now, will the cupboard be as bare as what he took over, what Deion took over at Colorado? Hell no. No, it will never be that. And if it is, USC's got a whole other set of problems.
Good God.
But Deion also isn't the answer because he doesn't like recruiting high school kids. And he's said as much. He doesn't go to high school kids. They come to him. Guess what? At USC, you better get your butt on a plane and go to visit kids' homes because that's what everybody else is doing. Kirby Smart is doing it. Dan Lanning is doing it. Ryan Day is doing it. And those are the guys that are out-recruiting USC in spades right now. And they're out-recruiting Deion Sanders at Colorado, too.
And the other thing about this is, my own personal view is, I was like, okay, let's see what Lincoln does. You know, year one was above expectations. I thought they would win 9, maybe 10 games. And they ended up winning 11. Caleb wins the Heisman. I was like, okay. Last year was a massive step back, and the only good thing that came out of last year was Alex Grinch getting fired. And that gives me, if I'm looking at USC, at least an iota of hope of Lincoln Riley changing, simply because Grinch was his guy and has been his guy. And everyone in the room was telling him he has got to go.
Yeah.
He not only got rid of him, he made impactful, and that staff and the AD brought in what should be impactful changes. You've got a couple dogged recruiters. Now, they are not living up to the recruiting level they should be at. That's absolutely still true. I tend to believe that's because they have not gotten their ducks in a row, as opposed to being as dysfunctional on the coaching football side of things. But, I mean, the flip side of it is they've also lost 3 5 stars that they had committed.
Well, and I think this is where the issues happen, is that when you have the chink in the armor, other programs pounce. And a little bit of the shine has come off of Lincoln Riley.
And I think that's what happened when those 3 5 stars, two of them to Georgia and one to A&M, left. And I think that's – if USC can somehow find a way to get into back into the top 10 in recruiting, they can probably save that.
And I'll tell you, recruiting, it's a 24-hour a day, 7-day a week job. And you have to have a staff that is committed to it. Not just a couple. You got to have a staff committed to it. And that, I don't know if SC has that, because you can get into the door with the NIL money. And again, money isn't everything in recruiting. No matter what you think, it helps you get in the door. It'll help you close. It does not win kids over. In the very few that it does, they ain't going to be there for long anyways. But, and USC is a great example of it. You're in Los Angeles. You have buttloads of cash that you can promise kids and say, hey, we have the funds to make
Forget
this
NIL,
happen.
We can get you legitimate sponsors of, you know,
but are
moguls.
Are you able to get in and connect with recruits and win recruits and their families over? Because USC... that should be no problem with them.
And yet
it is. And they have lost the good graces with a lot of the local powerhouses down there.
St. Bosco Prep, which used to be a pipeline.
Modern day.
Yep.
I mean, they are, and when you start having other schools infiltrate it, and this isn't just Lincoln Riley.
No.
This is a decade plus of we started to see with Clemson in Alabama, they started moving out into the West. Ohio State started plucking kids out of Southern California and off the West Coast. And now
Clay Helton was
they get your, when detriment. They get their hooks in though, all of a sudden, it ain't as cool to stick around and stay in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
They'll leave.
They'll see one guy. Hey, he did it. Hey, this guy did it. Hey, this guy did it.
And now you're looking at, that's where USC used to thrive, is we fence off our backyard in Southern California. And because we're cool, because we're SC, because they had those pit bull recruiters, they would go across the country.
Pull kids out of Florida every
year. New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Ohio. Like they had the ability to do that.
It's few and far between.
Yeah. It's an interesting... Feinbaum is...
He's got an axe to grind on Lincoln Riley, though.
He's missing the target on Deion.
No.
But I think with Lincoln Riley, there are some warts there that are starting to show. And when guys like Feinbaum start seeing those warts, oh, they're going to pounce on them.
I have a real suspicion if Lincoln Riley was still at Oklahoma, he would have a different view of...
Because he'd be joining the SEC at that point?
Yeah.
I don't know. He didn't like him at Oklahoma either.
That's what I'm saying. But that was...
But now that he's part 12, of the SEC, come on, pow! Yeah.
I just... Look, we've just seen a few too many times. Kind of a big chunk of news coming out of Big Ten Media Days that hasn't really hit the news circuits that much. Dennis Dodd is reporting that coaches are talking about roster limits in college football, and we've heard anywhere from 85 to 100. Dennis Dodd said that they had Luke Fickell on, the head coach at Wisconsin, who mentioned a massive, massive number of players on roster limits on college football teams. We'll talk about that and more, and the implications coming around Danny and Dusty, Tony the Fan. We've talked about the structuring of or restructuring of college football across not only the country, but individually across conferences, and the big boys having more say than anyone else at the table, as it should be. One of the lines that we heard coming out of anonymously out of the College Football Reporting as we're just careen towards a 40-team conference eventually. I don't know why we are pretending why we can't just get there, but was the limit on roster caps. And I personally am in favor of 85 to 100. I think that's the correct number. Luke Fickell said that he has heard in the room of coaches in the Big Ten that they wanted as high as 140.
Yeah, and look, that's not scholarship players, because I think, and there was a conversation earlier in late spring about rosters being capped at 85, and that would be your 85 scholarship players that you are allowed right now. And I think that that would be horrible for the game. Yeah. I think walk-ons, it doesn't matter how much they play. There is a spot and a place on a team for guys that are walk-on players. And some of them, they turn into serviceable players. But majority of them, they are the reason why like college football is great, right? Is because they had no other... They may have even had other offers, but they didn't have scholarship offers. They went to the school that they wanted to play for, and they did it because they love the school that they play for. And I think what that does is a lot of times that takes away guys who just are in college football for the love of the game, and those guys who are walk-ons end up being coaches in high school and college football later on in life.
Not just that. Here's your group of BCS-era walk-ons. Legitimate walk-ons that were studs. Stetson Bennett, pretty damn good.
Pretty good.
Baker Mayfield.
Pretty good. Bet on himself. Had an offer somewhere else.
Luke Falk.
Washington
State.
Washington State quarterback slinging it around for Mike Leach in the early days.
Matt McGloin. Penn State.
Penn State quarterback. I didn't know he was a walk-on.
Hunter Renfro.
Yep. Clemson.
Turned into an NFL player. here's the big one. There's actually two. J.J. Watt.
Yes, he left Central Michigan where he was playing tight end and went to Wisconsin. We all know the story. Pizza delivery boy turns into All-American defensive end and one of the best edge rushers in
ever.
NFL's history.
And then at USC, Clay Matthews, who, despite being a third-time legacy, did not get a scholarship.
See, there is a role. But I think that this is where that 140 is too far.
That's too far.
Because this is what teams will do to circumvent the rules here.
It's already being
done. You just go NIL.
Yeah.
And you get guys to walk on. You get them NIL deals. And... boom, you basically got a scholarship guy. Hey, we're going to give you just enough NIL to offset your tuition and your room and board.
Weird how that works.
Michigan did it with their defensive lineman who was like, you're a graduate student this year. Graduate school is far less expensive than being an undergrad student at Michigan. They said, how would you feel about being a walk-on? And your NIL opportunities are still there. Guess what?
Ta-da! And this is where I think you would
opens up a scholarship.
Well, I think you would start also turning into the hoarding again. I think we start seeing the Georges of the world where their second, third, fourth string guys should be on other rosters.
Yeah. But there is a sense of pride, though, from high school kids that you don't do the hat dance on signing day and get your scholarship offer. And that is, that's big to, and I mean, that can't be ignored.
That's
huge to a lot of guys. You're talking about what would happen is the guys who are in between Boise State and a walk-on spot at Oregon, Oregon's like, hey, you know, in this theoretical thing, right? Hey, we can offer you NIL opportunities as well at our university. And, you know,
your playing time might not be as significant. But
look, and all this is going to change. Maybe 140 is a feasible number when you have a salary cap, which is the path that we're trending towards in college athletics, is that a salary cap.
What does that number
look like? I know. Well, $20 million for a team. It's $20 million is what they're saying is like that starting point. Maybe that changes everything in the way that we look at it. And 140 guys is all these teams, they want as many bodies as they possibly can.
There's also a million kickers on this list.
Kickers
for days.
Kickers for days.
Well, what ends up happening is they look at the kicker they have on their roster, and then they throw out the open call to the student body. Hey, can anybody kick this oblong ball?
Yep.
And then
anybody. Clemson did that a couple years ago.
So I don't want to kill this guy.
Didn't they bring in a guy who quit football? And they're like, hey, man, can we call take backs on you quitting football, and can you come kick? Because we don't have anybody that can put the ball through the uprights.
Or anyone that we trust.
Yeah. I think we need walk-ons. There's a spot for them. There's a huge role. But 140 is, that is way.
I think 15 is a good number. Big. That's why I said 85 to 100.
Yeah.
Like that's that.
I mean, just think of what are you doing with numbers there? I mean, we already have guys doubling up numbers left and right. Like you're looking at 140 guys.
They got prison numbers, got dashes.
I'm 0.7. Yeah. That's my number.
Good Lord.
That's where we're going. 140 would be
that's too many.
A massive number, though. And I think that would be the trickle down. And the reason why there is a conversation there is because when you have the autonomous four that are going to be working, there's fewer opportunities for those guys, right?
Yeah.
And so if they want to play in one of the four big conferences, by the way, the autonomous four, they could say, yeah, we have 140 spots on our teams, and the other schools that will be under the NCAA umbrella, under what Charlie Baker, the president of the NCAA, he proposed just last week that, hey, we let the four big conferences break off, do their own thing. The NCAA does not govern them any longer. If that happens, the big four could say, yeah, 140. Meanwhile, the NCAA could go, we're going to go to 100. We're going to go to 100.
Tighter.
Yeah.
Do you want to pivot back to the NFL and go with some unhinged Harbaugh talk?
Yeah, I have my Big Ten comps done.
You have done?
I have my Big Ten
comps
done. I got the Big Ten comps.
I tasked Dusty with finding our comps so we can have our introductions for those that are just now diving into their Big Ten knowledge base. These are your crossovers. What team from the Pac-12 kind of exists in the Big Ten cinematic universe, as it were?
Yeah, some will be reaches, some will make complete sense.
Okay, we'll get to that and more coming up. But first, it's the Big Kahuna Sports and Update.
I hear they got some tasty burgers.
Earlier, I tasked Dusty with finding the fair comps between the previous iteration of the Pac-12 and what the new Big Ten looks like. It's the crossover examples.
Yeah, I mean,
the multiverse.
Michigan and Ohio State, they do not have comps because they've won national titles in the last 20 years, which is a big difference.
Been there, done that.
But if you want to go, since the Big Ten expanded out and we're looking for Pac-12 equivalents here, I think I got some. I think I got some for us. First, we'll go Penn State. Penn State is, to me, USC is the comp for them. Rich football history, historically really good, and they have a rich tradition of football, but they have their ebbs and flows, their ups and downs. Well, they'll go from a Rose Bowl to a Pinstripe Bowl. You go up and down, but the expectation is Penn State is really damn good. But they getting over the hump is the big one there. Last conference title outright was 2016 for Penn State, where they can be really good. They can be pretty mid at the same time, right?
Also, both their quarterback or the quarterbacks from both schools never good in the NFL.
Yeah, that's a good point. Iowa, this one was simple. It's Utah.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
right?
That's probably the straightest line you can draw in college football.
They are fatally flawed.
Incredibly well coached.
But you are sitting there going, nobody wants to play them.
No.
Nobody wants to play them at the end of the year. Defense is always good. And you always have this, where did this guy come from? And they turn out guys to the NFL. They develop talent like nobody else.
Utah, it's the Pauly kids. In Iowa, it's the white kids.
It's the cornbread, corn-fed boys that just, God, they are monsters out
They
there.
Have white corners.
Yeah.
And they don't just have them. They're good.
Yep. Wisconsin. I'm going, this is a hybrid pick for me. This is a hybrid pick.
Can I guess?
Go ahead.
Oregon State.
No.
No, oh, okay.
No. Wisconsin is because they are consistently good. Mm. They will bloody you and play a smash mouth version of football, but can still be very exciting. They are a hybrid of Utah. And then I will throw in this one because of the atmosphere, how wild it gets, and the fact you never want to play there in November, Washington State. They are Utah, Washington State.
That's really
hybrid.
Good. Okay.
Where they like going to Camp Randall Stadium.
It's an outpost that you don't want to go to.
It's an experience.
Rice-Eccles is honestly.
Rice-Eccles was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. But I look at Wisconsin, it's got a little bit more flash.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
For sure.
They do with the history. And look, I mean, people can crack their jokes at Washington State. Washington State has turned out some really damn good NFL players, too. So, in historically speaking. So, I'm going with a hybrid of Utah.
Camp Randall's 80,000.
It's huge. Jeez. It's nowhere near Martin Stadium. Martin Stadium is small, but win or lose, they still booze. That is the same thing that they have at Wisconsin.
33,000.
And those almost three people go nuts. And they're out there when it's, 10 degrees. If the team is good, that stadium is packed, and they are going absolutely crazy.
Here's a fun fact about Camp Randall. The construction cost. It was built in 1917.
Yeesh.
$15,000.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we've got Wisconsin, Washington State, Utah hybrid. Michigan State, this one was an easy line to draw for me. It's Oregon State because of Jonathan Smith, because Aiden Childs, because Jack Velling, because of all the transfers they have there. And then there's also this where, now, they are different in Oregon State in that they have a richer tradition in history, but when they do not have the right coach in place,
it goes into
the side of the mountain faster than you can imagine. And we've seen that at Oregon State, too. If you don't have the right coach in place, that place...
It's damn good.
And their runs aren't like... With Mark D'Antonio, they did build a lot of consistency there. On the heels of one great year from Nick Saban where he said, deuces, going to LSU. He rode that thing out. Right coach, stayed there
Five
for a long
years?
Time. And they were consistently good. Oregon State has not had that long run, though.
No.
Right? And Michigan State has had far more success overall as a program than Oregon State has. But the lines with Jonathan Smith... taking Oregon State's coach. That's what they're going to be. They're going to be
and
in
being
that
little
new
brother
mentality.
In the state.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Nebraska. This one was tough. I think they are more. I have two of them from the Pac-12.
UCLA
and UW.
Yep.
Where because UW and UCLA, their tradition is deep and it is rooted. Nebraska, it is. And UW, their fan base is. Still very passionate, even when they have their downs, right? That
and
Nebraska
Big Red is
that.
Still very passionate.
But Nebraska is on another level than what UW is even, because people still show up when they're bad. But that one is also, when the right coach is in place, that thing is humming.
Mm-hmm.
It can get humming. But they've had their bad hires too, Scott Frost, Mike Riley.
Basically, everyone for the past 20 years.
Yeah. And then, like UCLA, they could have the right coach and run him off as well. So you have that. But that one, I feel very uncomfortable with that. I'm just going with...
It's the heritage.
The tradition, the history, and their fan base is unlike any other. And look, a lot of these comps, the fan bases are nothing like the Pac-12.
No, it's different.
Nothing even close. But rich tradition, history, but when you fall on hard times, boy, do they want to be back in a way that you cannot imagine.
It's interesting. This is where I feel full old guy.
Yeah.
Is Nebraska, because the kids that are 20 right now, they have no idea what peak Nebraska was.
Yeah, Nebraska is not a again, feel very uncomfortable with this comp because it's tough.
Peak Nebraska was the best team in the country and good for a decade.
Honestly, both those schools, UW and UCLA, they have traditional uniforms that have always looked clean. Nebraska always looks clean.
They do.
Look good. Northwestern, Stanford, nerds. Right coach in place, really good.
Yeah.
Not good or relevant at all if they don't have the coach. Purdue, that is also a Washington State comp for me. You go back, really fun offenses in the 90s and through the 2000s.
Yeah.
But you sit there and you look and you go, boy, they can be really bad.
Boy, they're a basketball school.
Yeah. It can go south in a hurry.
Shout out, Clay Thompson.
In the middle of nowhere, West Lafayette, Indiana, Pullman, Washington. You're kind of out in the sticks. I think
they probably both booze a lot.
West Lafayette, I believe, is closer to Indianapolis than Washington State is to Seattle. But at the same time, you're out there. You're kind of in the boonies. Purdue guys that's a really smart school, though.
No, it is.
I mean, they got astronauts. John Glenn.
Which, again, kind of shows you the bar for astronauts back then.
Yep, different. Maryland is Oregon without the wins. They have an apparel magnet behind them who gives them really cool uniforms, but they just don't win.
God, those helmets are great.
I like the white. Are you talking the white ones or are you talking the flag?
The flag.
Oh, I hate the flag.
Do you?
Ones.
Oh, yeah, I love the flag ones.
Those are bad.
It is easily the busiest helmet that I've ever liked, because normally I don't like that much going on.
Yeah. And look, they wanted to be the Oregon of the East.
Yeah.
Hadn't worked out for them.
Well,
they're Oregon without the wins right now.
Maybe make a shoe that doesn't suck.
Yep. Rutgers is Cal. Tough out. Yeah. Smart kids. Mm. Tough out.
Expensive.
And you sit there and you go, New Jersey is sneaky, a really good football state, high school football-wise. Northern California, like, how are you not peeling more of those guys off?
Yeah, no, right? Even though the Northeast doesn't play football, it's because the line stops at New Jersey.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you don't play football in New York.
Mm-mm.
But Jersey. New Jersey, you still play football.
Illinois, damn, this is a tough one. This is tough. I didn't know. I went Cal, Arizona State, hybrid.
I was going to say Arizona State.
Where there's talent in the state of Illinois. You're going, how are you not...
Hanging out, keeping those guys?
Better than
and it's funny, because it's outside of Chicago.
But tough out, like Cal, every year.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't have a good one.
Arizona State never keeps anybody in state.
Minnesota is Arizona, because if you look at how a lot of Iowa and Wisconsin are built, kids from Minnesota.
They stay.
they go to Wisconsin or Iowa. Arizona, high school football talent in Arizona is loaded.
It's insane, and they all go to USC.
And you wouldn't think that state has that much talent as it does. Very similar to Minnesota. And you're going, they should be better. And sometimes they sneak up on you. You're like, oh, damn, they're really good. And then they disappear for 4 or 5 years, and then they'll cycle back around. You'll be like, oh, wow.
You see the 23 players that come out of Chandler, Arizona every year.
It's crazy.
Come out of one city, and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah. And then Indiana's Colorado pre-Dion, but not good ever. Not good ever.
Yeah.
Just like all the bad Colorado. Not any of the good Colorado. Just the bad of it. Just it's all bad. Indiana's really bad at football. And I hope Kirk Cignetti is the guy who comes in like Dion and changes it, because he's putting it out there. All I do is win. Look me up, bro. I'm good.
There you go.
So I hope they get better. I don't know. Yeah. Bloomington, Indiana.
There you go. Little
Indiana and Illinois didn't like it.
Otherwise,
either of those.
Otherwise, pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard because we're having to familiarize ourselves with Big Ten football, and it's a different world over there.
It is. It's very different.
The thing is, whether it's you go down this list and you go Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, Iowa, Wisconsin, Nebraska, those fan bases show out. And I think that's going to be the biggest difference.
Yeah, the first time Nebraska plays at Oregon and the Oregon fans see how they travel, they're going to go, what the hell is this?
And they have played at Oregon.
And recently?
2016?
Was that? I thought it was longer than that ago.
Let's see. No, that was at Nebraska in 2016. 2017. Oregon won 42-35, and they showed up.
Okay, there you go. All right, coming up next, Chauncey Billups made a little podcast appearance, and well, he shared a little something.
Whoa.
Don't post things at halftime. Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan. It's basketball offseason, which means it's podcast season, and Trailblazers head coach Chauncey Billups hopped on with old Carmelo Anthony.
Blazers legend.
Blazers legend. I hate that. And old Miro from Desus & Miro talk about a lot, but more specifically, what not to do as an NBA player.
We in New Orleans. We're down like 18 at the half. I had a kid. He had a nasty dunk. We coming out for the third quarter. This motherfucker done posted his dunk on his joint.
Stop it.
At halftime. Halftime, hey, bro, we down 18.
You got to optimize those numbers.
What you do, though? What
you man,
do?
You know I grinded his up, man. I get wind of it. I said, hey, yo, bro, get the back there and take the down off your joint, man. What the is wrong with you, man? Yeah. My bad, coach. He run to the back. We getting bombed, bro. We down 18. He posted a joint at halftime. I said, man, what is going on?
I have a reeling suspicion that that was probably Shaden.
You think it was Shaden Sharp?
Probably Shaden.
I'm trying to look this up right now because now my interest is peaked with who that could have been. When they went to New Orleans this past year, I don't believe that they were down at 18 at halftime. So deductive reasoning here would tell me it'd have to go back to the previous year
because
they only had one trip this past year. I wonder who it would be. You think it's Shaden Sharp?
I'm just going off of who would have had a dunk so good and who would have had who would be on social to do it. Because I'm trying to think, like, guys that, you know, would have a good in-game dunk, you're limiting it.
Yeah.
Because Scoot didn't really dunk much last year. Ant doesn't dunk all that often, and he doesn't do anything till late. And I'm just sitting there kind of going through young guys. It's pointing pretty clearly to Shea.
All right.
But I don't want to completely sully his name until...
I feel like we have the date. March 12th, 2023. The Blazers...
Shea would have been out, though.
The Blazers were in New Orleans, and they were, in fact, down 18 at the half. We could go to Jeremy Grant, Cam Reddish, Yusuf Nurkic, Matisse Thybulle, Anthony Simons, Drew Eubanks, Trendon Watford, Jabari Walker, or Nasir Little. Or Shaden Sharp was in that game. Shaden Sharp played 22 minutes that game.
Ooh.
And had 14 points.
Yeah.
Yeah, we think it's him?
I think it's Shea. I'm gonna take a look at this, dive into it a little bit further.
All right. That does it for us today. Tomorrow we're back. Big Ten Media Days. It really ramps up with the local schools or the new members, I should say. Not the locals. They'll be on Thursday where Oregon and Washington debut with the Big Ten. Tomorrow, USC, UCLA. Dirt and Sprague will be from 6 a.m. till 10 a.m. We take over at 10 and lead you all the way up till 3 o'clock tomorrow. Big Ten Media Days brought to you in part by Mods PDX. The future of building is here, and also by Legends Casino. Fun is how we roll. Up next, it's 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. Primetime with Isaac and Soup right here on The Fan.
Bye. Worst case scenario, you get sucked out of a hole. Earlier, I tasked Dusty with finding the fair comps between the previous iteration of the Pac-12 and what the new Big Ten looks like. It's the crossover examples.
Yeah, I mean,
the multiverse.
Michigan and Ohio State, they do not have comps because they've won national titles in the last 20 years, which is a big difference.
Been there, done that.
But if you want to go, since the Big Ten expanded out and we're looking for Pac-12 equivalents here, I think I got some for us. First, we'll go Penn State. Penn State is, to me, USC is the comp for them. Rich football history, historically really good, and they have a rich tradition of football, but they have their ebbs and flows, their ups and downs. Well, they'll go from a Rose Bowl to a Pinstripe Bowl. You go up and down, but the expectation is Penn State is really damn good, but they getting over the hump is the big one there. Last conference title outright was 2016 for Penn State, where they can be really good. They can be pretty mid at the same time, right?
Also, both their quarterback or the quarterbacks from both schools never good in the NFL.
Yeah, that's a good point. Iowa, this one was simple. It's Utah.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
right?
That's probably the straightest line you can draw in college football.
They are fatally flawed.
Incredibly well coached,
but you are sitting there going, nobody wants to play them.
No.
Nobody wants to play them at the end of the year. Defense is always good, and you always have this, where did this guy come from? And they turn out guys to the NFL. They develop talent like nobody else.
Utah, it's the Pauly kids. In Iowa, it's the white kids.
It's the cornbread, corn-fed boys that just... God, they are monsters.
They have white corners.
Yeah.
And they don't just have them. They're good.
Yep. Wisconsin. I'm going, this is a hybred pick for me.
Can I guess?
Go ahead.
Oregon State.
No. No,
oh, okay.
No. Wisconsin is, because they are consistently good, they will bloody you and play a smash mouth version of football, but can still be very exciting. They are a hybrid of Utah, and then I will throw in this one because of the atmosphere, how wild it gets, and the fact you never want to play there in November, Washington State. They are Utah, Washington State
hybrid.
That's really
good. Okay.
Where they, like, going to Camp Randall Stadium.
It's an outpost that you don't want to go to.
It's an experience.
Rice-Eccles is honestly...
Rice-Eccles was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun, but I look at Wisconsin... has got a little bit more flash.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
For sure.
They do with the history. And look, I mean, people can crack their jokes at Washington State. Washington State has turned out some really damn good NFL players, too. So, in historically speaking. So, I'm going with a hybrid of Utah.
Camp Randall's 80,000.
It's huge. Jeez. It's nowhere near Martin Stadium. Martin Stadium is small, but... win or lose, they still booze. That is the same thing that they have at Wisconsin.
33,000.
And those people go nuts. And they're out there when it's, you know, 10 degrees. If the team is good, that stadium is packed. And they are going absolutely crazy.
Here's a fun fact about Camp Randall. The construction cost. It was built in 1917.
Yeesh.
$15,000.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we've got Wisconsin... Washington is Washington State, Utah hybrid. Michigan State, this one was an easy line to draw for me. It's Oregon State because of Jonathan Smith, because Aiden Childs, because Jack Velling, because of all the transfers they have there. And then there's also this where now they are different in Oregon State in that they have a richer tradition in history. But when they do not have the right coach in place,
it goes into
the side of the mountain faster than you can imagine. And we've seen that at Oregon State, too. If you don't have the right coach in place, that place.
It's damn good.
And their runs aren't like. With Mark D'Antonio, they did build a lot of consistency there. On the heels of one great year from Nick Saban where he said, deuces, going to LSU. He rode that thing out. Right coach, stayed there
Five
for a long
years?
Time. And they were consistently good. Oregon State has not had that long run, though.
No.
Right? And Michigan State has had far more success overall as a program than Oregon State has. But the lines with Jonathan Smith... taking Oregon State's coach. That's what they're going to be. They're going to be
and being
that
little
mentality.
Brother in the state.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Nebraska. This one was tough. I think they are more. I have two of them from the Pac-12.
UCLA
and UW.
Yep.
Where because UW and UCLA, their tradition is deep and it is rooted. Nebraska, it is. And UW, their fan base is. Still very passionate, even when they have their downs, right? That
and
Nebraska
Big Red
has
is
that.
Still very passionate,
but Nebraska is on another level than what UW is even because people still show up when they're bad. But that one is also when the right coach is in place, that thing is humming.
Mm-hmm.
It can get humming, but they had their bad hires too, Scott Frost,
yeah.
Mike Riley.
Basically everyone for the past 20 years.
Yeah. And then like UCLA, they could have the right coach and run him off as well. So you have that. But that one, I feel very uncomfortable with that. I'm just going with...
It's the heritage.
The tradition, yeah. The history, and their fan base is unlike any other. And look, a lot of these comps, the fan bases are nothing like the Pac-12.
No, it's different.
Nothing even close. But rich tradition, history, but when you fall on hard times, boy, do they want to be back in a way that you cannot imagine.
It's interesting. This is where I feel full old guy.
Yeah.
Is Nebraska. Because the kids that are 20 right now, they have no idea what peak Nebraska was.
Yeah, Nebraska is not a... again, feel very uncomfortable with this comp because it's tough.
Nebraska was the best team in the country and good for a decade.
Honestly, both those schools, UW and UCLA, they have traditional uniforms that have always looked clean. Nebraska always looks...
They do.
Look good. Northwestern, Stanford, nerds. Right coach in place, really good.
Yeah.
Not good or relevant at all if they don't have the coach. Purdue, that is also a Washington State comp for me. You go back, really fun offenses in the 90s and through the 2000s.
Yeah.
But you sit there and you look and you go, boy, they can be really bad.
Boy, they're a basketball school.
Yeah. It can go south in a hurry.
Shout
out
Clay Thompson.
In the middle of nowhere, West Lafayette, Indiana, Pullman, Washington. You're kind of out in the sticks. I think...
They probably both booze a lot.
West Lafayette, I believe, is closer to Indianapolis than Washington State is to Seattle. But at the same time, you're out there. You're kind of in the boonies. Purdue guys are... That's a really smart school, though.
No, it is.
I mean, they got astronauts. John Glenn.
Which, again, kind of shows you the bar for... Astronauts back then.
Yep, different. Maryland is Oregon without the wins. They have an apparel magnet behind them who gives them really cool uniforms, but they just don't win.
God, those helmets are great.
I like the white. Are you talking the white ones or are you talking the flag?
The flag.
Oh, I hate the flag.
Do
ones.
You? Oh, yeah, I love I the flag
those
ones.
Those are bad.
It is easily the busiest helmet that I've ever liked because normally I don't like that much going on.
Yeah. And look, they wanted to be the Oregon of the East.
Yeah.
Hadn't worked out for them.
Well,
they're Oregon without the wins right now.
Maybe make a shoe that doesn't suck.
Yep. Rutgers is Cal. Tough out. Yeah. Smart kids. Mm. Tough out.
Expensive.
And you sit there and you go, New Jersey is sneaky, a really good football state, high school football-wise. Northern California, like, how are you not peeling more of those guys off?
Yeah, no, right? Even though the Northeast doesn't play football, it's because the line stops at New Jersey.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you don't play football in New York.
Mm-mm. It's
but Jersey. New Jersey, you still play football.
Illinois, damn, this is a tough one. This is tough. I didn't know. I went Cal, Arizona State, hybrid.
I was going to say Arizona State.
Where there's talent in the state of Illinois. You're going, how are you not...
Hanging out, keeping those guys?
Better than
and it's funny, because it's outside of Chicago.
But tough out, like Cal, every year.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't have a good one for
Arizona that, State but. Never keeps anybody in state.
Minnesota is Arizona, because if you look at how a lot of Iowa and Wisconsin are built, kids from Minnesota.
They stay.
they go to Wisconsin or Iowa. Arizona, high school football talent in Arizona is loaded.
It's insane, and they all go to USC.
And you wouldn't think that state has that much talent as it does. Very similar to Minnesota. And you're going, they should be better. And sometimes they sneak up on you. You're like, oh, damn, they're really good. And then they disappear for 4 or 5 years, and then they'll cycle back around. You'll be like, oh, wow.
You see the 23 players that come out of Chandler, Arizona every year.
It's crazy.
Come out of one city, and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah. And then Indiana's Colorado pre-Dion, but not good ever. Not good ever.
Yeah.
Just like all the bad Colorado. Not any of the good Colorado. Just the bad of it. Just it's all bad. Indiana's really bad at football. And I hope Kirk Cignetti is the guy who comes in like Dion and changes it, because he's putting it out there. All I do is win. Look me up, bro. I'm good.
There you go.
So I hope they get better. I don't know. Yeah. Bloomington, Indiana.
There you go. Little
Indiana and Illinois didn't like
No,
it.
No, but
didn't
but
like either of those.
Otherwise, pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard because we're having to familiarize ourselves with Big Ten football, and it's a different world over
there. Very different.
The thing is, whether it's you go down this list and you go Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, Iowa, Wisconsin, Nebraska, those fan bases show out. And I think that's going to be the biggest difference.
Yeah, the first time Nebraska plays at Oregon and the Oregon fans see how they travel, they're going to go, what the hell is this?
And they have played at Oregon.
And recently?
2016?
Was it that? I thought it was longer than that ago.
Let's see. No, that was at Nebraska in 2016. 2017. Oregon won 42-35, and they showed up.
Okay, there you go. All right, coming up next, Chauncey Billups made a little podcast appearance, and he shared a little something.
Whoa.
Don't post things at halftime. Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan. It's basketball offseason, which means it's podcast season, and Trailblazers head coach Chauncey Billups hopped on with old Carmelo Anthony.
Blazers legend.
Blazers legend. I hate that. And old Miro from Desus & Miro talk about a lot, but more specifically, what not to do as an NBA player.
We in New Orleans. We're down like 18 at the half. I had a kid. He had a nasty dunk. We coming out for the third quarter. This motherfucker done posted his dunk on his joint.
Stop it.
At halftime. Halftime, hey, bro, we down 18.
You got to optimize those numbers.
What you do, though? What you
man,
do?
You know I grinded his up, man. I get wind of it. I said, hey, yo, bro, get the back there and take the down off your joint, man. What the is wrong with you, man? Yeah. My bad, coach. He run to the back. We getting bombed, bro. We down 18. He posted the joint at halftime. Yeah. I said, man, what is going on?
I have a reeling suspicion that was probably Shaden.
You think it was Shaden Sharp?
Probably Shaden.
I'm trying to look this up right now because now my interest is peaked with who that could have been. When they went to New Orleans this past year, I don't believe that they were down at 18 at halftime. So deductive reasoning here would tell me we are going, it'd have to go back to the previous year
because
they only had one trip this past year. I wonder who it would be. You think it's Shaden Sharp?
I'm just going off of who would have had a dunk so good and who would have had who would be on social to do it. Because I'm trying to think, like, guys that, you know, would have a good in-game dunk, you're limiting it.
Yeah.
Because Scoot didn't really dunk much last year. Ant doesn't dunk all that often, and he doesn't do anything till late. And I'm just sitting there kind of going through young guys. It's pointing pretty clearly to Shea.
All right.
But I don't want to completely sully his name until...
I feel like we have the date. March 12th, 2023. Mm. The Blazers...
Shea would have been out, though.
The Blazers were in New Orleans, and they were, in fact, down 18 at the half.
Mm.
We could go to Jeremy Grant, Cam Reddish, Yusuf Nurkic, Matisse Thybulle, Anthony Simons, Drew Eubanks, Trendon Watford, Jabari Walker, or Nasir Little. Or Shaden Sharp was in that game. Shaden Sharp played 22 minutes that game.
Ooh.
And had 14 points.
Yeah.
Yeah, we think it's him?
I think it's Shea. I'm gonna have to take a look at this, dive into it a little bit further.
All right. That does it for us today. Tomorrow we're back. Big Ten Media Days. It really ramps up with the local schools or the new members, I should say. Not the locals. They'll be on Thursday where Oregon and Washington debut with the Big Ten. Tomorrow, USC, UCLA. Dirt and Sprague will be from 6 a.m. till 10 a.m. We take over at 10 and lead you all the way up till 3 o'clock tomorrow. Big Ten Media Days brought to you in part by Mods PDX. The future of building is here, and also by Legends Casino. Fun is how we roll. Up next, it's 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. Prime time with Isaac and Soup right here on The Fan.
Bye. Worst case scenario, you get sucked out of a hole. It's basketball offseason, which means it's podcast season, and Trailblazers head coach Chauncey Billups hopped on with old Carmelo Anthony.
Blazers legend.
Blazers legend. I hate that. And old Miro from Desus & Miro talk about a lot, but more specifically, what not to do as an NBA player.
We in New Orleans. We're down like 18 at the half. I had a kid. He had a nasty dunk. We coming out for the third quarter. This motherfucker done posted his dunk on his joint.
Stop it.
At halftime. Halftime, hey, bro, we down 18.
You got to optimize those numbers.
What you do, though? What you
man,
do?
You know I grinded this up, man. I get wind of it. I said, hey, yo, bro, get the back there and take the down off your joint, man. What the is wrong with you, man? Yeah. My bad, coach. My bad, coach. He run to the back. We getting bombed, bro. We down 18. He posted to join at halftime. I said, man, what is going on?
I have a reeling suspicion that that was probably Shaden.
You think it was Shaden Sharp?
Probably Shaden.
I'm trying to look this up right now because now my interest is peaked with who that could have been. When they went to New Orleans this past year, I don't believe that they were down at 18 at halftime. So deductive reasoning here would tell me it'd have to go back to the previous year
because
they only had one trip this past year. I wonder who it would be. You think it's Shaden Sharp?
I'm just going off of who would have had a dunk so good and who would have had who would be on social to do it. Because I'm trying to think, like, guys that, you know, would have a good in-game dunk, you're limiting it.
Yeah.
Because Scoot didn't really dunk much last year. Ant doesn't dunk all that often, and he doesn't do anything till late. And I'm just sitting there kind of going through young guys. It's pointing pretty clearly to Shea.
All right.
But I don't want to completely sully his name until...
I feel like we have the date. March 12th, 2023.
Mm.
The Blazers.
Shea would have been out, though.
The Blazers were in New Orleans, and they were, in fact, down 18 at the half.
Mm.
We could go to Jeremy Grant, Cam Reddish, Yusuf Nurkic, Matisse Thybulle, Anthony Simons, Drew Eubanks, Trendon Watford, Jabari Walker, or Nasir Little. Or Shaden Sharp was in that game. Shaden Sharp played 22 minutes that game.
Ooh.
And had 14 points.
Yeah.
Yeah, we think it's him.
I think it's Shea. I'm gonna take a look at this, dive into it a little bit further.
All right. That does it for us today. Tomorrow we're back. Big Ten Media Days. It really ramps up with the local schools or the new members, I should say. Not the locals. They'll be on Thursday where Oregon and Washington debut with the Big Ten. Tomorrow, USC, UCLA. Dirt and Sprague will be from 6 a.m. till 10 a.m. We take over at 10 and lead you all the way up till 3 o'clock tomorrow. Big Ten Media Days brought to you in part by Mods PDX. The future of building is here, and also by Legends Casino. Fun is how we roll. Up next is 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. Primetime with Isaac and Soup right here on The Fan.
Bye. Worst case scenario, you get sucked out of a hole.